In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Birmingham, Alabama's local supergroup, The Blips. They had an eponymous debut album in 2021 on Cornelius Chapel Records. They followed it up this past November with their second album, Again. And it features a recent coolest song in the world, She Still Shouts. Joining me to talk about the track and the album is band member Taylor Hollingsworth. And he'll join me after we hear a bit of their tune on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. You got the Mighty Manfred here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and for today's Coolest Conversations, I am joined by guitarist and vocalist Taylor Hollingsworth from Birmingham, Alabama's The Blips. Their second album, titled Again, is home to this week's coolest song in the world, Still She Shouts. How are you, Taylor?
Man, I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there pretty well so far, New Year and stuff like that, but I want to ask you, man, it's like... Sorry about the big game there the other day, right? You know, it's a big game. Are you much of a football fan?
Man, I watched it. I wouldn't say I'm a huge football fan, but I do usually watch the Alabama games if I can. That's pretty much the only games I would watch. But because, you know, Alabama football is just so big around here. It's kind of more of a... almost more of a social thing for me. A lot of my friends really follow it, you know. So, you know, I like to be able to chime in with them and stuff. But,
well, sure, you know, sure. I have to say, well, the first time I was going, first times we play, you know, the Woggles would go over and we would play in Tuscaloosa. And this is back in the 90s, early 1990s. And coming from Athens, Georgia, you know, there was a very definite line between, you know, arts-related things, musicians, and people that were into sports. I mean, there was very little crossover, you know, very
yeah,
little,
I remember
very
that.
Very regimented. And then we would go over and play in Tuscaloosa, and that line just did not exist. And whereas we mm-hmm. would say things like, oh, we would play a show there, and they would say, oh, tomorrow's like a game day, and we would be like, oh, how horrible. And they're like, no, actually, it's great. We're all going to go to the game. You know, we're all going to be watching the game. And we were like, really?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. There was no delineation between that.
Yeah. Yeah. In Tuscaloosa, especially, it's everybody, you know, it seems like everybody, even the artists and musicians, they pull for the tide, man.
Right.
It's crossed over.
You know, we crashed out at a friend's house. We had played a party, and he's like, "You guys, you know, can just crash here," and that was great. And then the next morning, I mean, you know, we stayed up pretty late, and it was just seemed like 2 hours later. Maybe it was a solid 4 hours later. But anyway, it's like, oh, hey, guys, you know, kind of move the sleeping bags out of the way. Everybody's coming over to watch the game now. And we were like, what?
Yep, exactly. Man, I remember, speaking of Tuscaloosa, though, I might have mentioned this last time we talked. But, you know, I saw the Woggles for the first time at Egan's in Tuscaloosa. And it was, you know, pretty eye-opening. I mean, you guys were obviously very good. I hadn't seen many bands, you know, doing what you guys were doing, and to the level that, you know, you guys clearly had studied the music and were really doing it right. And it was really cool, man.
Well, you know, we are sort of British types, you know, want to get that study doing. That studying on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, y'all.
We should mention to people, anybody listening, that the bar you're describing, Egan's, you know, it's just a setup on the floor place, and you literally have to walk through the band to get to the tour.
Yeah.
You know,
I used to love playing there.
You gotta be nice to the musicians, or they won't let you through. You know.
Oh yeah, man.
When they're swinging those axes, there's no, you know, yeah, Bob, get clobbered.
Yeah, man.
So have you ever played? You've played Egan's then at some
point. Oh yeah, many times. Yeah.
Yeah,
I used to play there all the time.
Well,
back in the day, you know, it's closed down now.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Nothing is consistent in this chaotic world, is it?
I know.
Well, one thing I want to point out about mentioning the Egan's is that people used to always be quite amazed when we would talk about playing there in Tuscaloosa in general, because there used to be no closing time. When we were playing there, when we first began to play there in the 90s, there was no last call at 2 a.m. or last call at 1 a.m. or midnight even. And so when first they changed the law to like you had to close, you know, like I guess it was early on Sunday nights or something like that. And so we after that, when we did play Egan's every now and again, we're like, we're never playing that on a Friday night because they're going to keep making us play. And then that was brutal. It was fun, but it was brutal. You know, there's only so many ceiling tiles you can knock out over the course of an evening, you know, right. You know?
Yep. Mm. Yep.
So yeah. The last time we spoke about the blips, that was like in early June of 2021. We talked about how you guys were formed, how you guys were all in other groups, but I'd like you to remind us about what was the impetus to create the blips.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it was in my mind, it seems like every band member you ask almost has a different version of this story. But the way I remember it was I had been speaking with Will Stewart about creating a band together. And then I had simultaneously been speaking to Chris McCauley about starting more of like a punk band. And at first, you know, it was like me and Will's band, they were different. They were going to be different genres. And then Will ended up speaking separately with Chris McCauley and Eric Wallace about starting a band. And then Wes McDonald came in because when me and Will were talking about our band, we were like, well, Wes would be perfect on drums. And then it was just kind of like we were having the conversation. And when he brought up that he was also talking to Chris, I was like, well, hell, why don't we, this should just be one thing, I guess. And let's just get together and see what happens, you know? Right. So we got together in a room with amps and guitars and everything set up. And we had zero songs. We had nothing. We were like, let's just throw together, like, let's just basically like jam on like some easy chords and just see if anything kind of happens. And I think that very first day we walked out of there with like the basics of like five or six songs from that first record.
Wow.
So it just kind of was it you know, there was just, we just kind of clicked, I guess. It was just real easy. It was nice, you know.
Well,
nice when you don't have to cry so hard.
Well, you were mentioning, I believe, you mentioned Wes McDonald's name, and he's the drummer. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so he's a drummer, but he also runs Cornelius Chapel Records, or the label you guys are on. That is one of his sort of projects.
That's correct, yeah.
So tell me something about him, because does he also goes, you know, uses a pseudonym of Terry Ohms?
That's right, yep. He has a... that's his solo project. And then I think he's released some stuff under his own name as well. But at some point he started using Terry Ohms. And then he used to have a band called Vulture Will as well. We were all fans of that band.
So when he said, hey, let's put all this together, it was like, oh yeah, well, you know, we've got the label set up. Now we just need to come up with the songs and you had the session together.
Exactly.
Oh, that's it. Oh, really? Good, 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 good.
Exactly. It was just, yeah, it's pretty, kind of came together easily.
So now with Wes, and he's got the label, is that like a full-time thing for him, or does he have a separate day job as well?
I believe that is all he's doing right now. Yeah.
Right. And then yourself, you work as as primarily just as a musician.
Yeah. So I make my living just as a musician, mostly playing solo.
Yeah.
I do I play local around Birmingham all the time. And then I travel as well, but, not nearly as much with the family. Once the family came into the picture.
Sure. So when you're doing solo stuff, does this mean it's just you playing literally by yourself, or you're doing your own material backed by a band?
Nope, I play by myself. I got like a foot stomp box that I use, kind of like a kick drum sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play electric guitar direct through my PA.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of like I can get a lot of different sounds. I use a Silvertone guitar, mm-hmm. I like that direct guitar sound a lot. It's kind of like Link Ray kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned a Silvertone guitar, so it's got those lipstick pickups on it.
Yeah, that's my guitar, man. I just cannot put it down. I just love it. I keep trying other ones, but I always go back,
Well, obviously, when you're doing that, your solo thing there, I mean, you don't have the full band behind you like you do in the blips, but the type of stuff that mm-hmm. you're doing when you're playing solo, what is that? Is that your own songs?
Yeah, it's all my own songs. Yep. It's more of a, more like electric, I call it folk and roll. It's kind of like, or electric folk, there's still a good bit of rock and roll and blues influence kind of going on, but I'm doing a lot of kind of quick kind of finger picking kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then singing over it. A lot of times I'll do, like the melody, and I'll sing the melody that I'm also playing on the guitar at the same time kind of thing. I do the rotating thumb bass line, I keep the bass going with my thumb and stuff like that. I've got a new solo record that I recorded the same way, just kind of live, stomping on the floor, playing guitar. I did my friend Matt Patton, you probably know Matt from Dexatines,
and I do, yeah,
Drive By Truckers. He helped me make this new solo record, and he played bass on it live while I was playing. He played amazing bass. So I'll make sure you guys get a copy of it.
Oh, well, maybe, thanks. Well, let me ask. Yeah, so when you're playing doing the stuff with the blips, are you using mm-hmm. the Silvertone? Is that the axe?
Yeah. Yep. Still using the Silvertone. Yep.
So let's talk some about the new album. Again, it came out this past November. Well, when did you guys record this?
So let's see. I guess we started recording that God, it feels like forever ago. Probably a year and a half ago is when we started tracking it, I guess. And then it took a little while to get it mixed. I mean, it was like after the pandemic and everything, but, you know, I don't know. It was still, everybody was still distant for some reason. I can't really remember why, but
yeah.
Cause like I still sent in overdubs that I did. Like I did some vocal overdubs and things from the house.
Yeah.
But we had gotten together and track, cause we always, with that band, we always set up in the same room and record live, but we don't, you know, we live minus the vocals, I guess.
Right.
And then we overdubbed the vocals, but for some reason I know I was sending in my vocals later.
Oh, so that's interesting. So I get the idea of, you know, doing the basic tracks live, but so you didn't add in any like guitar overdubs or any overdubs, any solos later on, just the vocals.
The only solo, well, I don't really do many solos with the Blips. The only lead I sent in later, and this was one solo, was on Eric's song "The Push," and I sent in that. It's kind of a surf guitar solo type of thing. I did send that in later. But it was, sort of wasn't planned, I guess, originally. Like when we recorded it, I don't know what we were thinking, but I remember listening back at my house thinking it seems empty there. It needs something. So at that same time I was doing my vocals, I went ahead and laid down a lead guitar just here at my home studio. And sent that in as well. So, but I think that's the only overdub solo as far as I can remember. At least to my knowledge.
Let me ask you about the first album. I think you had finished that all up, and then the pandemic hit, so you were delayed releasing it for the newer record. For Again, you mentioned sort of starting on that about a year and a half ago. The material that's on Again, when did you guys work that up? What did you just get together for some sessions where you were just kind of jamming again, or how did that material come together?
Yeah, so this one, there was a bit of that, but like we sort of each brought songs in. You know, like I remember, like I wrote "Good Looking Liars" and I wrote "Stay Up." Like I wrote "Stay Up" like years ago, like probably 5 or 6 years ago, and it just never landed on anything. Mm-hmm. And then so that was one that I'd been sitting on. And then, you know, like "Good Looking Liars" and like, I guess maybe, oh, "Glass People," I wrote that one on my own. So I think it was just those three that I had written separately and then brought to the table. And the other guys sort of did that too. Like I know Will had written, like "Who Took My Baby Away" separately, at least to my knowledge. I mean, you know, when we bring them in, like we might, you know, the band might say, "Hey, what if we did this? Or what if we did this and try something different here?" But for the most part, those were written, you know, beforehand. I think there were a few that we did sort of do like more like the first record, like "The Push." I remember we were kind of writing that together.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that you guys are featuring is "The Coolest Song." "She Still Shouts," that was actually Eric's guitar riff that he brought in, and I remember listening to it at practice. It was like, let's play this riff, and we jammed on it, and nobody, at first I was like waiting on him to sing, you know, like, are you gonna sing something? And then I switched to bass on that one, so I was playing the bass, and I was like, oh, well, can I try something out here? You know, I had a melody in, that just popped into my head when I heard it. So I started singing that, sort of, and that's like how the first record was. You know, it was like, you just kind of go with the inspiration of the moment.
Right.
So I went with that. And then I remember saying, like, well, why don't we cut out, you know, I think he had like a couple other parts that were going on. And I was like, why don't we just simplify this and just like use this main riff and this thing? You know, I think we kind of retweaked the chorus chords together. Mm-hmm. And then once we settled on that, you know, I had a melody where I was just kind of mumbling words to in my head. And
yeah.
I would sing that. We recorded it like on our phones or whatever to keep, to help remember the idea.
Right.
And then I got home later and wrote the words out that fit to the melody I was singing.
And so that is you, that you singing lead vocals on it then.
Yeah. That's me singing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got kind of, your voice has got kind of a Tom Petty kind of vocal.
Yeah, I've been told that many times. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like Tom Petty fronting the Jam on that one. Do you like that description?
Heck yeah, man. That's I love that.
You know, yeah, what? I want to talk some. I mentioned the, I'm sorry, what were we going to say?
Oh, go ahead. No, I was saying, yeah, I grew up loving Petty. So makes sense.
It makes
sense. But go ahead.
Well, so they, you mentioned writing Stay Up and the, or we have been sitting on that one, and the album opens up with that track. So back when I was like in the, my late teenage years and, you know, trying to get the okay to go out to a midnight movie, my dad would say, you know, boy, ain't, no, what'd he say? That's it. Folks up after midnight, just those folks up after midnight are just up to no good. Now, have you found that to be ever be the case?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of no good out there, but you know, a lot of people are just want to have fun, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of
yeah.
people are a lot of night owls out there in the world. So,
well, you know, we're not too far removed from New Year's, right? We're little ways, halfway roughly into January. So, New Year,
yeah.
I know you've got. Wife and a daughter. Did you actually go out on New Year's Eve, or did you just try and stay up late to make it to midnight?
Man, I did not. We my daughter actually went out to a New Year's party, and I believe she stayed up beyond past midnight. She's only 11, so hopefully she's not getting in anything bad. But she spent the night with her friend. Me and my wife came down with COVID. And, of course, now the daughter got it after that, too. But, yeah, so we actually did not do anything for New Year's. I think I fell asleep at, like,
well, you know, 11. I think I want to share this to you. I think this is what we all should be doing, man. It's what we all should be doing. So I know you guys are, like, a central time. You got to celebrate. Yeah. Celebrate New Year's on when they drop the ball in New York. See, and I don't like being like a New York centric kind of thing. I can't stand that. But in this one instance, I think it's brilliant because out here, that means, you know, bed by 10, right? You know,
right.
It's at 9. It's, you know, you go over to wherever you're going and it gets around 6 o'clock, you know, that's around 6 o'clock. And then
perfect.
Isn't that perfect? That's a gift.
Perfect. I give
you. You can feel free to enhance.
I'll
that, you know, run with it.
I'll be using that. I'll be living by that every year from now on for sure.
Yeah. Well, who sings lead? Better I want to ask you this: Who sings lead on the track "Slow Lane"?
Slow Lane. That's Chris. That's okay. Chris McCauley.
Yeah, because definitely it's a different vocal quality there. And I was trying to figure out. Who was that? And how did that tune come together? Was that one that you sort of jammed out, or did Chris bring it to the table?
Chris brought that one to the table. Like, I think I remember, like, maybe throwing in a couple little parts or something like that. Ding, 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 ding. For sure, I remember doing that. But yeah, I mean, that was his song for sure. And he, of course, wrote the words. I guess anybody who sings, whenever you hear one of us singing, that's who wrote the song. Basically.
Just like Lennon and McCartney in it.
Yeah. Same kind of.
So I would, kind it's of interesting to me, you know, it's just the story of Laika, the Soviet dog that shot into space.
Yeah.
You guys have a song, Laika. How familiar with her story, the dog story, were you before you came up with a song? Were you already familiar with her story?
So that's one that Will wrote. Mm-hmm. And he sings. Yeah, I was familiar with the story, not super familiar with it. But I do remember hearing about it. But yeah, that was his idea, which is a super cool, super fun idea, I guess, to write about.
I was fascinated. I was familiar that I knew that they had shot the dog up there, and it wasn't until, you know, years later that I realized, oh, they weren't going to bring her back, you know, that there was not, that was not even conceptually, that wasn't it, right?
Yeah,
the dog up
probably
there.
Possible. Yeah.
And let it, and I thought, man, that makes the story that much more tragic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange story, really.
Do you have do you have a dog or any pets?
Oh yeah. I'm a big time dog lover. Yeah. We've got, 3 dogs currently. But sometimes we'll have 4. We rescue dogs.
Oh,
a lot, a pretty good bit.
Yeah.
My wife actually just recently left her job with the Humane Society here in Birmingham. So we were, you know, seeing pretty tragic cases of dog abuse and, or just, you know, dogs living in really bad conditions. And during COVID, I was a volunteer driver for the Humane Society. So me and this guy, Bob, a retired guy from Chicago, we both would drive vans like of maybe 50 dogs, up north. And they send about 12 of these Sprinter vans a month up north to where there's not as many stray dogs, so they can get them adopted out easier. Wow. Up there.
Wow.
Yeah, because they can't.
Up there, is there particular, what's a particular region that doesn't have a lot of stray dogs?
Yeah, well, it's kind of spread out. I mean, a lot of the trips were to Wisconsin for some reason. There was like 2 or 3 shelters up there that they were connected with and that would take in that many dogs at one time. And then I did some drives up to Jersey, somewhere near DC. I think there was one in New York State, not the city, but somewhere up in that region.
Yeah.
And those are tough drives because you got to leave at 5 p.m. and you try to arrive at that place by 7 a.m. So kind of like when they get to work there is when they unload all the dogs and help you unload all the dogs.
Right.
Wow. But so we, you know, when you have that many dogs, I mean, you can't really stop and like walk them all, and they're strays. So some of them are big, some of them are, you know, you can't, it's really difficult to get them in and out of the kennels in the van because they're stacked up, you know, on top of each other.
Wow.
So like a big dog up high is really difficult to get. And so that's why you do it at night. You know, they feed them, they walk them, and then they put them in the kennel into the van. Then they turn the lights out back there. They're air cooled or temperature, you know, climate controlled.
Right.
Depending on what the temperature is. And then they just sleep through the night, and then they wake up and you're there, you know. So it's a bit of a tough drive, but, you know, for guys like us who have been touring in vans forever, you know, for me, it was like, this is nothing, man.
That's right.
I'm your guy.
Right.
Trust
as
me.
A band, as a band van, man, that's no problem for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're used to being around dogs, you know, not just yeah, you know, all kinds of human dogs too, I suppose.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Many so you mentioned a tune on there. I think this is one that you would. It was one of your songs, Glass People. That one had me thinking of Badfinger, kind of in the intro part as well. Was it? Really? Did you mention Glass People was one of your songs?
Yeah, that one's one of mine. Yeah.
And when does that date from?
That one is within that when we made the record. I think. Yeah, that was one that I was just working on my own, and you know, brought it to the table because I figured we needed a song, another song. It was like not at first a song I would think would be a blip song, but you know, because mostly we were doing more rock kind of, yeah, a bit faster type stuff or whatever, more edgy. But I was like, let's try this out and see, you know, if it fits. And I loved the way the guys played it.
Mm-hmm.
The feel everybody had with it. So I think at that point, that's when I finished the lyric writing and all that, once I knew it would fit well. I sort of have, like, you know, a lot of times I start with melodies, and like I can hear the melodies when I play chords or play riffs or whatever. That, you know, that kind of comes to me easily, but it's the lyrics that are always a challenge. You know, you gotta really dig deep to come up with something, at least for me. You know, it's hard, man. You gotta sometimes, I mean, I will spend days and days and days, full days of trying to write, you know, one song, and you know, you'll throw it away 10 times until you finally land on something that is good, you know.
The thing too about, surely you must find this frustrating about like working on lyrics, is that so often you're playing out, the PA is underpowered, and
yeah,
you know, you've labored over the words, and you know, a lot of people don't know what the hell you're singing.
I know.
I find that so frustrating.
Yeah.
How about you?
I mean, I guess, you know, I do, but at the same time, I kind of, you know, figure, I mean, I just accept it, I guess. I sort of think, like, when I was younger and first got inspired by music, I wasn't really listening to the words that closely. You know, half the time I probably didn't really know what the lyrics even were, really.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it wasn't till, you know, later when I started realizing, like, how important they were to me, you know. So, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Well, I think,
but then you always get a few people that really love it, you know, and then that's what, you know, it balances out.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Well, I was going to ask, I know, you know, for instance, you're playing out quite regularly as a solo thing, and my understanding is the other guys in the band, they've all got their other things happening, but I believe you guys played out last month in December. Right,
we did. Yep,
you did play. So, do you have any other scheduled gigs upcoming?
Not currently at the moment. But we're talking about scheduling some stuff. So we'll see.
Does that mean just playing like a one-off in Birmingham? Does that actually mean playing several shows outside of town, even?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about playing several shows outside of town. It's just lining everything up with everybody. And, you know, like basically just everybody's full-time schedules with their daily lives and their jobs and their families. Right. So it's not quite as easy as, you know, when I was 23 and, you know, it was like, jump in a van, it doesn't matter, let's go for 6 weeks. And you know what I mean? Like, doesn't matter if we make $50, you know, we'll scrape by and sleep on floors. You know, it's a little harder than that now. But, I mean, I think we all would like to to get out and play some shows. I mean, we might try to do, we've talked about doing like an East Coast kind of run, maybe up to New York area, New York City or, you know, in Jersey and stuff like that.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, so we'll see. I hope it comes through. Hope it happens.
Well, another favorite track of mine on the album, and it's the song I want us to go out with, is "Who Took My Baby Away." Now, you mentioned a moment ago who came up, was it Will that came up with that?
That was also Will Stewart. Yeah.
Very, very cool. And so was that something that he had sort of completed, or was it just bits of that he brought to everybody's attention?
I can't remember fully. I want to say it was somewhat completed, but I think room for change. You know, I think it was like we sort of talked about it. I always try to, you know, because like when we started the band, the Blips, our idea behind the band was simplicity, fun, you know, songs that we're going to have fun playing.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that was kind of so like, a lot of times, I don't think this was the case with Who Took My Baby Away necessarily, but sometimes, you know, folks will bring in and it'll have like all these different parts. And I'm always the one sort of like, let's just strip out, like, let's just keep the very few hooks here and like get rid of everything else, you know, and just really simplify these and just make them fun, easy to play. So I think Will had already kind of done all that when he brought that song, but I can't remember fully. I know he didn't have the lyrics. At first we were joking, or sort of like he was talking about, this was when QAnon was like a big thing, you know?
Yeah.
When we were jamming on that. So at first he was saying Q took my baby away, and it was kind of like this funny song about, you know, your lover being, you know, their minds being manipulated or whatever, you know, they're lost by this QAnon craziness, you know. It was kind of like, that was at first what it was about. It's like, but then I think he was like, well, I'm just going to say who, but he does say Q in the like at the end of the verse at one point.
Oh, okay. So people should be listening for that when we play it here in a moment.
Yeah, and he talks about the pizza place, the pizza gate thing, in the verse too, which is pretty funny.
Well, so speaking of, you know, humor involved with it, when the first time I listened to it, and I love the song, so we're going to take going to spin it in a moment here. It, for some reason, it, you know, Who Took My Baby Away started making me think of that Jimmy Cross song, I Want My Baby Back. Are you familiar with that at all? It's like a novelty thing, like Dr. Demento, Jimmy Cross says, I Want My Baby Back. You know what?
I'm not sure if I know that one.
Well, I'm wanting you to look that up because it's like a parody sort of Leader of the Pack. So it's from this, but it's from the,
okay,
it's from the perspective of the guy that takes out the leader of the pack, and he's talking about on his end, you know, they have the wreck, and he's calling out, you know, he wants his baby back, and it's, you know, I don't want to give it all away, but it's quite humorous. And he's like, you know, wakes up from the wreck and he's like, and there was my baby, and over there was my baby, and way over there was my baby. And so it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I'll check that out for sure. That's cool.
Well, Taylor, I want to thank you again for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Oh, man, it was an honor and a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome, and looking forward to our next chitty chat. So we got to get another album out. Got to get to keep going.
Yeah.
We're going to take a listen now to the Blips, Who Took My Baby Away, off their most recent album Again, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Hug and kiss and kiss you like the day after day.
Well, some of the Blips' song, Who Took My Baby Away, off the band's latest album, Again, and available from our friends over at Cornelius Chapel Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Taylor Hollingsworth for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Green Day's new album is Saviors, and I look forward to talking all about it with Billy Joe Armstrong. He's my guest for our next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.